Toksik Newsom, Selamat, thank you, and welcome to Juno Afternoon from community-supported KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us via our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Today, Theater at Latitude 58, in collaboration with the high school, is producing Camelot. We have a preview with some of the team before its opening next weekend. And for the next week, the Marie Drake Planetarium and the Juno Nordic Ski Club invite you and your family to take Planet Ski, a little tour through the solar system. Steve Kosis is here to share more. And we'll begin today with the KIN Support Program's Positive Indigenous Parenting Series. It's a monthly program in partnership with the Juno Public Libraries starting up next week. But first, Monday is Elizabeth Paratrovich Day, an Alaska state holiday honoring a Thinkali activist who testified before Alaska's territorial legislature in Juneau to demand civil rights for Alaska Native peoples. This happened in 1945, about a decade before the civil rights movement gained momentum down south. KTOO's Yvonne Krumrie spoke with Juno author Ernestine Hayes about Paratrovich's influence and what she thinks the activist would do if she were alive today.
Tlingit author Sean Kach'at Ernestine Hayes says Elizabeth Paratrovich and her legacy inspire her, especially as she reads the news today.
Not only are we facing the same challenges as she faced, but we have her as a model, and if we stop and consider what would she be doing right now, today, then we can use her example as the choices we should make.
Hayes has written two memoirs chronicling her life in and out of Southeast Alaska in the wake of Paratrovich's legacy. She was selected as the Alaska State Writer Laureate in 2016. In 2021, she was named the Rasmussen Foundation's Distinguished Artist, and 2 years later, she was awarded a United States Artist Fellowship. One way Hayes thinks we can embody Paratrovich's mission today, making sure that Alaska Native people continue to have a seat at decision-making tables.
We need to ask, has that discrimination that Elizabeth Paratrovich fought, has it just moved out of the restaurants and into the boardroom and into the organizing committees?
And Hayes says Paratrovich's fight against discrimination isn't over, especially when it comes to pointing the mirror at ourselves.
If we speak out or demonstrate against or protest against an administration that as policy is trying to destroy diversity and inclusion, then we really should be modeling that ourselves.
Hayes says having a state holiday to celebrate Paratrovich's legacy is a step towards deeper and more meaningful acknowledgement of the role Alaska Native people have had and continue to have in shaping our community.
It's certainly not our ultimate goal, which is inclusion. But I think it's a good step as long as we always remember there's no real final step in nurturing our values. There's always more to do.
In the 1940s, the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood began petitioning Alaska's territorial governor for civil rights protection. That included equal access to public facilities and services, banning racial discrimination in businesses open to the public, and no more signs that said things like, quote, no dogs, no natives. Paratrovich's testimony is often credited with swaying the territorial legislature. Although no audio recording of her actual testimony exists, a version of it for kids has been memorialized in an episode of the PBS kids show Molly of Denali.
I must remind you, senators, that Native people are treated unfairly in this state. How do you think Native children feel when they see signs that read, no Natives allowed, and aren't allowed in the same school as white children? Today, you can tell the world how we are treated is wrong and pass this law to make discrimination in Alaska illegal.
Elizabeth Paratrowich Day, every year on February 16th, marks the anniversary of the Alaska Anti-Discrimination Act, passed in 1945. It was the first Anti-Discrimination Act to become law in any state or territory in the United States. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juneau at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com, federally insured by NCUA. You are listening to Juneau Afternoon on your public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Beginning next week, the KIN Support Program's Positive Indigenous Parenting Series begins. It's going to be a monthly program in partnership with the Juneau Public Libraries. What is the KIN Support Program? What is the Positive Indigenous Parenting Series? Well, I'm pleased to be joined now to share more by Vanessa George, who's the co-director and family specialist with the KIN Support Program, as well as Lenora Walker, family specialist with the KIN Support Program. Gunath Cheesh, Ha'iyadi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both in the studio. Wasi'iyati, how are you today, Lenora?
Gunath Cheesh, for having us here today. Thank you, Boston. It is really nice to be here and be able to talk about the KIN Support Program. We are a nonprofit entity that wants to provide services to relatives who are taking care of little relatives outside of the foster care system. So if you are caring for little relatives and you need access to resources, we want to be able to help you connect with those resources. We have 1.5 caseworkers. We're family specialists, and we do case management. We also have an attorney that works with the relative or kin caregiver, and we contract with a parent attorney that can do some consultation. We want to do community activities. We want to make sure and help families access cultural activities. We do outreach, and we partner with a lot of other agencies in the Southeast region.
I love that. And Vanessa Wasi'iyati, how are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having us.
Of course. It's a pleasure to have you here. And Lenora, thank you for that explanation of sort of what the KIN Support Program is. I had Holly on. It was a while ago. I think it was soon after, maybe 6-7 months after, because this is a fairly new service, a new organization here in Juneau. What year did it begin?
We opened doors in 2024.
2024, that's what I thought. Okay,
July
2024.
July 7th of 2024.
Yeah, that's awesome. And all that background and experience that you all bring, I wanted to just talk about that before we get into the Positive Indigenous Parenting Series, which is going to be beginning next week. It's going to be a really cool thing. But Vanessa, maybe let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up getting to the KIN Support Program.
Gosh, it was kind of roundabout. I started out with the CIRC program.
Okay.
So I believe their name's a little bit different now, but Southeast Regional Resource Center.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Department of Education, worked with AUIC for a little bit, did some time at corrections. My most significant amount of time was with AWARE as a legal advocate there.
Okay.
I'd worked with Holly before in 2015 at Alaska Legal Services as her office manager, and then worked with her a lot when I was with AWARE as a legal advocate.
Okay.
ALSC helped us with legal issues at AWARE, and so stayed connected with her for that. And then one day she was like, hey, I'm leaving this place and I want to do this thing. Are you interested?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, sure. And so between her, Charlene Griffin, which is our admin finance person, and myself, we got started and started putting the program together and like looking at what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do it. And then before I knew it, we had our nonprofit credentials and started hiring folks and got going.
And you're rolling. Yeah. What brought you to this work originally? What was the inspiration for you to get into this line of work?
My grandmother.
Oh,
my grandmother's Lydia George from Angoon.
Okay.
And I grew up in a kinship care situation. I grew up with my grandmother.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that is culturally appropriate for Tlingit from Angoon. Mm-hmm. And so we have a long history of kinship care. Mm. It's foundational to the culture. And so my understanding, the way I was taught, is that's the way it's supposed to be. Western perspective, perception on it is a little bit different. But I think there's some value that we can share, not just with Indigenous folks, but non-Indigenous folks, about traditional Indigenous parenting. It's not a cure-all for anything, but it's another tool in your belt to help you survive parenting and survive kin care relationships.
So is that what kin care means, is being taken care of by somebody who isn't the mother or father? Is that what that means?
That's the way we're approaching it.
Okay.
There's a specific definition for like blood relation, this, that, and the other. But the way we look at kin care is, if you are someone that's known to a young person, a young child, and you are willing to provide care for them, that's a kin care situation. You know the child, you want to provide support, you want to help the family. That's family. That's what family does.
That's so interesting. You and I share that. My grandparents were who pretty much raised me as well. Mm-hmm. That's pretty amazing. And Lenora, your background, tell us a little bit about your journey to getting to the Kin Support Program.
My background's a little bit shorter. So I started out with Search Behavioral Health, had been with them for several years. I have also worked with the tribe, Central Council, Tlingit Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. Did a lot of child welfare, very passionate about making sure that families are safe, children are well taken care of. And I needed a change, and Holly and Vanessa let me know that there was a role just waiting for me to fill and step into some shoes and continue working with families.
Yeah, and it's always been a passion of yours to do that?
Yes.
Yeah.
It really has. That's a whole nother story, and I think I really want to make sure that we have enough time to talk about.
Oh, we're going to have more than enough time.
Oh, okay.
Don't you
okay.
worry.
Yes. So child welfare is very important to me because, you know, my family, we were involved in the child welfare system, and I wanted to make sure that we could break the cycle with my children. You know, my kiddos had to be cared for by somebody other than myself. And when I was able to get it together, my kids came back to my care. And I just really feel like it's important to give back when I received so much.
And that's kind of where we're heading to, right? This sort of this positive Indigenous parenting series is that giving back, is training folks to learn how to do things in certain ways. And this is going to be a monthly series. So where did the idea for this arise, this series?
Well, the Positive Indigenous Parenting Curriculum was created by NICWA, National Indian Child Welfare
Association.
I always want to call it an ACT, Association. And we actually got trained through the Alaska Children's Trust. So they offered the training on how to facilitate the curriculum. And we went up for 3 days and got to learn about it. And we went in a little apprehensive because, you know, it's hard. You know, we're Indigenous, and we went to an organization that's not technically Indigenous to learn about Indigenous parenting.
Right.
But then we got into the curriculum and how it can be used and how it can be adapted, and I was just enamored. Mm. I love the way the structure is built. I love the opportunity to invite knowledge bearers and elders local to our community and to our culture to come in and talk about it from our perspective. Mm-hmm. And it's adaptable for any Indigenous group that can find elders and knowledge bearers or that have experience in their own culture to take this foundation and adapt it to what it needs to slip into it, sort of.
Oh, so people could maybe take this course, these monthly, and how many months is it going to be?
It's going over 7 months. We're going to have two classes in August.
Two classes in August. So 8 sessions total.
8 sessions total.
And then once that's done, you're saying that then folks will have some knowledge that they might be able to...
There's a separate training, a facilitation training that needs to be completed to be able to be like a certified sort of facilitator.
Sure.
And there's a potential for that, but not anytime soon with us.
Right. Okay. I see. Yeah. So take me through it a little bit, Lenora. Like, what's the structure? Like, first class is next Friday, right?
Yes.
And this is going to be 1 to 3 p.m.
Yes.
And it's going to be out at the Mendenhall Valley Library.
Yes.
Lunch is provided.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to sign up. You got to email Vanessa. We'll give that out in just a second here. But Lenora, so like next week, what's the first class? What are we going to be learning?
Oh, my gosh. I did not bring my notes.
That's okay.
For the first class, but the setup is we will talk about traditionally how we were meant to parent.
Okay.
We will talk about how historically things have happened and changed the way that we do or that changed the way that we were meant to parent.
Mm.
And then how we have this ability now to reach back and rely on stories, rely on messages, rely on each other, knowledge bearers, to parent in a healthier fashion and not be so, I guess, westernized.
Mm, mm-hmm.
It's like I'm treading very lightly because there is a difference in parenting styles. When you're in the Western world, everything is very structured and you have this time limit and it's individual. But when you're part of a Native community or family, time is different. The lessons are different, and it's based on nature. There's a lot of stories that help teach the way that we carry ourselves. So,
is it sort of like, Vanessa, is it sort of like you have to unlearn a little bit and then sort of relearn different ways? Or is it because you're talking about bringing in the knowledge bearers, the elders, to sort of talk about where we are now to where we were, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to get back to where we were a little bit, yeah?
Well, it's not a matter of going back.
Yeah.
It's a matter of bringing forward.
Okay.
So not all, like, traditional practices are appropriate for this time.
Okay.
There are elements of it, though, that are foundational to the culture that are timeless.
Mm.
So the sense of responsibility to your community and
mm-hmm.
your community's sense of responsibility to you. My grandmother used to tell me, to the least of us.
Mm.
We are responsible for each other to the least of us. That there used to be no such thing as being homeless and no such thing as being starving, and that if a person found themselves in that situation, it wasn't a shame on them, it was a shame on their community. Because their community has a responsibility to them to make sure that they can survive, that they're okay. And our community of Angoon has an intimate relationship with that understanding because of the bombardment that we experienced.
Mm-hmm.
There was one canoe that survived that bombardment.
Mm.
And after all of our food stores and our housing and all of that stuff was decimated in that situation, that canoe and that family that had that canoe had to work together with the community to ensure everybody, in as much as they could, survived.
Oh, wow.
That's a foundational aspect to Thlinget culture.
Mm.
I am as responsible to you as a community member as you are to me as just another living being.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't just go between humans. We call ourselves stewards of the land because we have a responsibility to the land and to nature and just to our existence here as beings collectively and together. And so positive Indigenous parenting is about reintroducing that concept or introducing it for the first time for those folks who haven't had the opportunity to grow up in it the way I did or to experience it the way, you know, other people who have come out to the village or who have immersed themselves in the culture have.
I see.
We're hoping to introduce or reintroduce some of these foundational concepts.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that there's time between the classes, too, because you're going to do these mostly monthly except for August where you'll have two sessions. But the idea that then people can learn a little bit and then take that away, use it, ponder it, think about it, right, incorporate. So, Lenore, who's this class for? Who should be signing up for this class?
So it will be open to the community here in Juneau. And we're really hoping that we reach caregivers who are taking care of their little relatives, but grandparents, aunties, uncles, parents, everybody is welcome. Our program is really about providing support to the caregivers. Something very unique about us because we're not connected to OCS, we're not connected to the tribe. We partner when we can, but we are our own agency, so we can work with parents. So parents who want to reintegrate with their children who have been in care with somebody else for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They're more than welcome to come and join us. We want to be as inviting as we possibly can be because we have learned that being inclusive is who we are.
Absolutely. And again, these are going to be at the Valley Library. Is it a certain, pretty much a certain day every month? Is it vary?
Almost a certain day because of the library schedule.
Some of them are
a little bit different, but it's typically most often the 20th.
Okay.
But it's always on a Friday. It's always from 1 to 3.
Okay.
And the schedule is up on the library calendar. So if you go to the public library's events calendar and look up the Valley Conference Room, the large conference room, you'll be able to see it on their calendar.
Okay. And to sign up, we have to email you.
Yes.
Vanessa@southeastkin.org.
Mm-hmm.
Southeastkin.org is, and you want to put the subject PIP monthly, capital PIP monthly in that email so that Vanessa is flagged and get you signed up. And this begins next Friday the 20th, so people need to get on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have limited space, and so the sooner you can email or call, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you can go to southeastkin.org for all of the information about the Kin Support Program. You can read about these fantastic facilitators, all the other programs that the Kin Support Program is bringing to Juneau. As we mentioned, it's a fairly new organization, a couple years old now, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, getting there. This program sounds fantastic. Positive Indigenous Parenting Series. And you both are facilitating.
Yes.
We are.
Absolutely. Awesome. That's so cool. Well, Gwyneth Cheesh for being here
Thank you.
Telling us about it. Vanessa George, Lenore Walker from the Kin Support Program. It's the Positive Indigenous Parenting Series. Go to southeastkin.org for more information.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Gwyneth Cheesh.
Support from Hanson Gress, seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
It's true. It's true. The Crown has made it clear. The climate must be perfect all the year. A law was made a distant moon ago here. July and August cannot be too hot. And there's a legal limit to the snow here in Camelot. The winter is forbidden till December, and exits March the 2nd on the dot. By order, summer lingers through September in Camelot. 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 I know it sounds a bit bizarre, but in Camelot, Camelot, that's how conditions are. The rain may never fall till after sundown. By 8, the morning fog must disappear. In short, there's simply not a more congenial spot for happily ever after than here in Camelot.
I'm looking for a life of adventure and romance and love and meaning. And you're offering me a temperate climate, which, by the way, in England is ridiculous.
It's a metaphor, Your Highness. It's poetry. That means it's not literally about rain and snow.
I know what a metaphor is.
Camelot, say it.
No.
Try.
Camelot.
Yes, I know it gives a person pause. But in Camelot...
Again?
Yep.
Camelot!
Those are the legal laws. The snow may never slush upon the hillside. By 9 p.m. the moonlight must appear. In short, there's simply not a more congenial spot for happily ever after than here in Camelot.
That is a little bit of the 2023 revival of Lerner and Lowe's
Camelot.
I am Boston Christopher. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. Theater at Latitude 58 is a family theater where people from all age groups and skill sets join in making art. And this next week, they are collaborating with the Juno Douglas High School, Yada'a Kathle, to bring the classic Broadway musical Lerner and Lowe's Camelot to the stage, opening February 20th, that's a Friday, that's next week, and running for 2 weekends through March 1st. And here now in the studio to share more, I have Karen Allen, who is the director and also the runner, the main person over at Theater at Latitude 58.
I'd say we're a team effort, but I've been there a long time.
That's really fun. I like that. And then I also have, we have people who are in the play. So I'll start from left to right here. And I'm going to make it easy for everybody. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell what part you're playing in this musical?
Hi, I'm Rebecca Dietz, and I'm playing Mordred.
Mordred. Okay, we'll get into all who they are in a second here. And?
My name is Jalen Martin. I play Lancelot du Lac.
Lancelot du Lac. Okay, I like that. And then over here?
I'm Elena Kinatsu Truitt. I play Guinevere.
Guinevere. Okay. This is great. So, Karen, let me start with you. Camelot, Richard Burton, 1960 or so was when it premiered. Mm-hmm. That we heard was a little bit from the 2023 revival. This musical has been done a lot.
It has.
So why did you choose Camelot? And how did this collaboration with the JDHS school work?
So JDHS approached us last spring about possibly doing a collaboration to kind of build back up their drama program because the pandemic was hard on it and their participation rates were way down. Mm. And we thought maybe we could work together to help them build it back up and train up the next cast of high school kids to start teaching them our craft. And Camelot, for all that it is an old play, I mean, it opened in Broadway in 1960, still has themes that are staggeringly true today.
Mm.
You know, the primary discussion of the play is might right? Mm. Should the strongest person win? Or should we have a system of justice?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you look at the world today and the struggle King Arthur goes through is still, we're still fighting that every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a character like Merlin who lives backwards. Do you feel like you're living backwards
sometimes
right now? I mean, it's the story of Camelot is horribly true right now.
Mm.
Someone with strong ideals trying to create a just and fair society, and then people's selfishness and pettiness bringing it crashing down.
Yeah. So good message,
mm-hmm.
right? Good exploration of story. Also lots of roles.
A lot of parts, a huge orchestra.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, we not only have 45 people on the stage, we've got 20-some in the pit.
Oh, my goodness. And are those all musicians from the high school as well, or is that
a mix? No, we have musicians from all over Juneau. We have people, we have music teachers, we have people from the Juneau Symphony, and we have people from the assorted Juneau strings groups, and we have high school musicians.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so then, Rebecca, well, are all of you in high school?
No. None of them are.
No.
None of them are.
These are some of my adult performers.
Oh.
My high schoolers are still at school right now.
See, that's a compliment for you all, right?
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with you, Rebecca. I apologize. So you're playing. Tell us who you're playing and what their role is in this story.
So I play Mordred, Arthur's illegitimate son, and he comes in wanting just to have a shred of love and decency and kind of just gets bashed in the head, and so he decides that he is going to stir up trouble and ruin their lives.
Oh, I see. Are you the baddie?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay, how fun is that to play?
Very fun. Being evil is fun.
And you have the best single line in any song.
I do.
Oh.
What's your line?
Making my Beelzebubble burst.
Oh, yeah. I like that. So that's good. Really fun.
It's awesome.
That's really
good. I love
good.
My stupid stepson.
Thank you.
And Jaylen, tell me a little bit more about the role that you're playing and how it fits into the story.
Yeah, so I play Lancelot du Lac. He is like one of the knights of the Round Table. So basically put, my entrance is I beat up Arthur and then we become best friends.
And, oh, interesting.
A lot of Lancelot's like drive is to continue like fighting for, you know, like justice and just like finding, it's, you know, knighthood is just his niche interest. You know, everything was about knighthood until a certain point in which my new niche interest becomes Guinevere.
Right, of course, love trumps all,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
That's pretty fun. And Elena, tell me a little bit about Guinevere and her role in the story.
Yeah, Guinevere is Arthur's wife, Queen of England. And I think at the start, once she's okay with kind of being almost sold off, I think, from her point of view to stop a war between France and England and meets Arthur. And is like, okay, I can actually do this. This won't be that bad. I think she believes they are in a very romantic, loving relationship. And she, I think, really loves her role in ruling the country and helping guide him in right ways. Because he can be a little... His brain doesn't always put words right.
I can sympathize with, empathize with that.
Yes, yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
And kind of needs help on his train of thought in ways.
Mm.
And then when Lance shows up, She realizes that maybe the relationship she had with Arthur wasn't entirely what she thought it was. And maybe she hasn't felt romantic feelings until this, how we're doing it, woman comes into her life. And now, and that changes things.
So you're, Jaylen, you're playing Lancelot as a female then, not as a male. Okay.
I think it's fun. It's very, very fun. It's very showboaty, if you will. Yeah, portraying Lancelot as a woman is very, very interesting. It's very fun. And again, it's like, that's kind of the fun of it, is just being like, ooh, manly man. But also being like, woman.
Right. Have a little bit of both sides. Woman. So Karen, talk a little bit about that in terms of your casting of the play and your concept behind that.
So we have always believed at Theater at Latitude 58 that we try to match the best actor with a role. And that sometimes surprises you. You know, Lancelot is a classic baritone role. But you haven't really heard it until you have heard it sung as a soprano. It brings a certain beauty to it. Also, I mean, gender is just one way of looking at human beings. You learn different things about a role. I mean, you know, last spring we had a woman play Jesus Christ. There is a certain charm to opening it up and exploring it with the people who come to tell the story with you. And it, I think it gives things a richness. And with this play, we've also, we're playing a little bit with setting. Because, you know, it's set in the Middle Ages and usually has big storybook costumes. But if you listen to the score now, you can't hear anything but the 1960s. It's that hopeful early 60s, unbearably jaunty music. And so we have set the visuals as though it is in the Kennedy White House.
Oh, interesting.
Because John F. Kennedy loved this musical. And, you know, the title song Camelot came to sort of symbolize his presidency, both the good and the fall of his presidency. And so it, most of the action takes place in the White House.
Did you all, Elena, did you do some looking back at that time of JFK in terms of the 60s and kind of get an idea of what that genre or what that time was like?
Yeah, I definitely looked a lot, especially into Jackie Kennedy's fashion. I love fashion is a very big interest of mine, and I love learning about people through how they present themselves in that way. And so looking at...
Love your hat, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. You'll have to imagine it. I love seeing her style progression and the different ways that she presented herself to the public and versus the ways that she did in maybe more private settings. And especially seeing how much it affects your life to be such a public figure. You're kind of not allowed to be a person anymore. And any problems or insecurities have to be, I mean, for everyone, we have to hide them in a lot of ways. And you publicly have to keep them very secret.
At least especially that, then.
Especially then, of course. And I mean, getting back to, I as a bisexual person, I'm having a very fun take with this queer Lancelot and Guinevere. And especially having it set in the 60s, the struggle that they go through is more than just a forbidden romance because Guinevere's already married. It's because they're women. They couldn't, even if they wanted to, really, you know, divorce Arthur and live their own life if they wanted. Besides just, again, the political figures of it.
That's really cool. And then for the music... Jaylen, Karen was saying, so as opposed to a baritone, it's a soprano. Did you have to change? Did you have to reorchestrate the music?
No, not a thing.
No, okay.
She just sings it two octaves up.
Just two octaves up, okay.
Just two octaves.
It's the same thing. It's just higher. We are using entirely the original orchestrations.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's awesome. That's really
cool. We did not change a single word of the script.
Yeah, okay. You're just changing the interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to start over here again. Rebecca, how did you get involved with – is this your first show with – I know it's not, but I had to ask.
I've actually been with this company from the very beginning.
Oh, wow. Okay.
However many years it's been now.
I can tell you.
How many years now?
We started this theater in the spring of 2012.
2012. Okay, great.
So very, very long.
Rebecca's
time.
Been in a good percentage of our shows.
Okay. Okay. So you've been around.
Yes.
And what do you love about working with Theater at Latitude 58?
I love that we can come together and just be who we are. Mm. We can be crazy. We can be funny. We can just be us. Mm. And then we get to tell stories that sometimes people don't want to hear, or sometimes we get to feel emotions from our characters that heal us in a way. Like if we've had something happen in our lives and this character goes through something similar, and then you get to process it with that character. Mm. And so it can be very, very healing too.
Oh, well, theater's really good at that. And Jaylen, what about you? How many shows have you been doing with the Theater at Latitude 58?
I believe Camelot's going to be my fourth or fifth production. So okay. I joined the company in my debut as Cinderella back in 2023 and have since then kind of remained one of the key players.
What made you get into theater in the first place?
This is fun. theater, I've always been a performer. I started pretty early on in like choir and then that kind of transitioned into like orchestra and band. And then I was one of those kids who started their first year of high school during the pandemic. So at JD, we did a production of Fame the Musical and I was in drama class and they were like, oh, like anybody should audition. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to audition. Why not? I have nothing to lose. And then I auditioned, and then kind of from there, it's been like musical theater has like held me in a little box in a far off corner. Because like musical theater since then has become like a very deep passion of mine. Mm. And I continue to just love and learn more things with it as time goes on.
And Elena, what about you?
My whole family has been involved with performing arts for a long time. My mother is currently the executive director at the Juno Symphony and, you know, has been to college for performing. And so is my dad. He plays trombone and guitar. And all of my sisters and I were put into ballet classes very young. And so that's just been my whole world.
It's just been how you grew up.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't really start doing musicals specifically, though, until I was 13 with Theater Legend 58, our production of Fiddler on the Roof. That was my start. And I was scared to join, but a friend dragged me into it. And since then, there's no more comfortable place to be.
So this is like seasoned vets here. We've got the seasoned vets. So Karen, give me the rundown once again, all the deets and where people go to get more information or tickets.
Okay, so I'll start with the easy one. Tickets are available on the Juno Arts and Humanities Council box office, along, you know, your favorite source for all Juno tickets. They are also available from cast members or at the door, and we are performing at the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium, so we've got lots of seats, and we open 1 week from today. We play February 20th through March 1st. Friday night and Saturday night shows are at 7. Matinees are on Sunday at 2. And we hope you'll join us.
And more information, you can follow
Facebook. You can follow us on all of our social media.
Yeah, Facebook, Instagram, all those good things. Well, what a pleasure to meet you all, Elena, Jaylen, Karen, and, of course, Rebecca. And thank you so much, Gunnar Cheese, for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Everybody got it? We got it? It sounds like a really cool production. So break a leg, as they say in the theater. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company,
providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the outer limits of the solar system. If we go from Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, we get to Neptune, the eighth planet from the Sun. We're about 30 astronomical units from the Sun, where an astronomical unit is the distance of the Sun from the Earth, which is about 93 million miles. So beyond Neptune is a disc-shaped region, shaped like a donut, that is now called the Kuiper Belt. And that's where Pluto is. It seems to be the dominant object in the Kuiper Belt, a Kuiper Belt object. And let me just say that Pluto was a planet for almost 80 years, discovered in 1930, in 2006, demoted to a Kuiper Belt object because it doesn't dominate its orbit. Now, the Kuiper Belt contains millions of objects, probably two dozen of them about the size of Pluto, and realize that Pluto is actually not that large. It's large enough to be spherical in shape from gravity, but it's only about a sixth the mass of the Moon. And besides the other large enough objects in the Kuiper Belt to be spheres, the rest are small, from house size of houses down to pebbles. And occasionally they come into the inner solar system as comets. Now, beyond the Kuiper Belt, from 50 astronomical units to 100,000 astronomical units is the Oort cloud, a spherical halo around our solar system containing billions of objects, which once again, if they visit the inner solar system, are seen as comets. This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. Our public shows are on our website at mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
Wake up in the morning, watch the sun rise, go out onto the porch and have a good time. Wake up in the morning with the sun, go out onto the porch and have some fun. Stir that sunny feeling inside you for times when the lonely seems so long.
And that's a little Sunny Porch with their song Sunny Porch from their new album, The Sounds of This Place. And today, this is Friday the 13th at the Crystal Saloon, 5 p.m. They are having a folk revival and release party. That's today at 5 p.m. You can also catch that album on all of the streaming services. That's Sunny Porch. And speaking of music, don't forget that this February is the first ever Passenger Princess Takeover series on KXLL in collaboration with the Black Awareness Association. KXLL presents The Rhythm of Freedom. You can join co-hosts Christina Michelle and Al Boogie every Friday in February from 4 to 5 p.m. on KXLL 100.7 and 101.7 as they explore the soundtrack of Black history from spirituals to today. And they'll have a different guest narrator each week bringing a new voice and perspective. That's The Rhythm of Freedom today at 4 p.m. right after Juneau Afternoon. Just hop over to 100.7 or 101.7 FM KXLL. You are listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. And Juneau Nordic Ski Club and the Marie Drake Planetarium will set up Planet Ski at the Mendenhall Campground. It's over a groomed ski trail. You start at the sun, then you visit the eight planets of the solar system. Where's Pluto, you ask? Well, we'll get into that here in just a second. It will be present from February 14th through the 22nd. It reflects the permanent planet walk out at Twin Lakes. And I'm joined now by our frequent collaborator who does Star Party for us here at KTO on Juno Afternoon, Steve Kosis from the Redirect Planetarium. Gwyneth Cheese for being here, Steve.
Thank you, Boston. Steve Kosis here. And I just came from the campground where I skied it, and we have the eight planets set up with a big banner right there at the gate of the campground. And let me say, the Juno Nordic Club's been doing great grooming in the valley. Pretty much every day for the last month, I've been skiing Montana Creek and the campground.
That's excellent. So are you you're a member of the ski club?
I'm a member of the ski club, and I'm on the board of the Marie Drake Planetarium.
Yeah, and you do those great segments for us. We learn a lot about space and the stars and all those kinds of things. So tell me a little bit about the planet walk itself.
Well, last September, we set up a permanent planet walk at Twin Lakes, mm-hmm. and it starts at the sun at the playground at Twin Lakes, and it goes for about a mile where the pump house is, where Neptune is. And what's interesting is now we're a quartet of cities that have a planet walk.
Really? Where are the other ones? Okay,
yeah. Anchorage has a planet walk along the Tony Knowles Trail.
Okay.
Fairbanks has a planet walk near the university. And Smithers, B.C. has a planet walk. So we're now the fourth city in the north that has a planet walk.
How did these planet walks come about? Where did they originate?
Well, the tradition is that usually an astronomical group or society or planetarium sponsors a planet walk. Mm-hmm. There was one in D.C. At the mall. It starts at the Air and Space Museum and goes down, I think, pretty much all the way to the Lincoln Memorial.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So you can see a planet walk there.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And so this event, you're skiing on top of the planets, basically, right? Or you're skiing to the planets. You've set up this cool ski trail.
Well, you could say both, because if you've been to the Manhole Campground when it's groomed, the trail starts at the gate there, and that's where we'll have the sun. And then we have the planets on signs that are set up at the scale distance.
Oh, and what's the scale?
Well, the scale, we have it over about a 1.1 mile loop at the campground.
I see. Set up right now. Okay. So you have it equidistant to what it would be if that 1.1 miles was the whole solar system.
Exactly. But realize the planet Neptune, the eighth planet from the sun, is 30 times the distance from the sun as the Earth. So it's scaled over that.
I see.
So the Earth is one, what's called an astronomical unit, which is 93 million miles from the sun. And then Neptune is 30 times that.
Okay.
30 times 93 million miles, it's about 3 billion.
And I know you've explained this to me before, Steve, but where's Pluto?
Well, Pluto, it's interesting. In 2006, the International Astronomical Union had a big conference. I think there was about 2,500 astronomers present. And they made a new classification for objects that were then named Kuiper Belt objects.
Okay.
And Pluto was put in that category.
Is it too small?
Well, part of the reason, let me just say that there are two camps among the astronomers in 2006. One camp was the dynamical systems camp that said planets are defined by how they dominate their orbit. Hmm. And the other camp is the geophysical camp, which is a planet should be defined as orbiting around a sun and being spherical. So the dynamical system camp run out when they had the vote. But however, it could have been that the vote was rigged because the original conference in 2006 had 2,500 attendees, but when they had the vote, there was only 460 present.
Oh.
And over the globe, over the whole world, there's like 20,000 astronomers. So you could say there was some machinations going on. But
yeah, I'm in the camp of let's bring Pluto back. Should we get shirts or something for that? What
well,
do we do?
If anyone would really like to see Pluto out the Manhole Campground, the our organizations will gladly take a donation and we'll put up Pluto. Why not?
It'll be really tiny, but it'll be there. Yeah.
Well, actually, Pluto is like a sixth of the mass of the moon. It is quite
tiny.
It's
pretty
Pluto.
Tiny. Yeah.
It has a moon, Charon. It's almost the same size as Pluto. So
see,
it's
got a moon. So, yeah. You know, it's got to be.
Well,
anyway.
It has five moons, Pluto.
Pluto has five moons.
Five moons.
Wow. Okay. So this planet ski, it's self-guided, right, from the sun to Neptune. You're running it from Saturday tomorrow, February 14th, up to next Sunday, February 22nd. And in terms of being self-guided, do you want people to like post pictures of it somewhere and tag? Or is it just a community event that the Juneau Nordic Ski Club and the Planetarium put together?
All the above.
All the above.
But the main thing is I like to ski, so it gave me an excuse to be out there. So why not?
I see. And it's set up for families, right? Anybody can do this?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And actually, you don't have to just ski. If you walk along the edge of the ski trail, not walking on the groom section, but walk on the edge, you can just walk the ski trail.
I see. And I know I have a flyer here. I didn't have it far enough in advance there. But what is the where is this QR code going to take me to?
Oh, it'll go to the website for the Marie Drake Planetarium.
I see.
It has a little
okay.
more information on it.
Okay. And you guys always do Friday specials, right, at the planetarium?
Oh, yeah. Tonight at 6 p.m., we're doing a show on Pluto, the Kuiper Belt, and the Oort
Cloud. Hey, wait. How did I know that? That was my third sense there, I guess.
Large-scale structure of the solar system.
I see. Okay. That's
Actually, let me just say really quick.
Yeah.
Our solar system spreads out almost a quarter of the way to Alpha Centauri, the nearest star, about a light-year radius of our solar system.
That's
kind of the
cool.
gravitational boundary of the solar system.
I love that. And so why is the ski planet ski only up for a week?
We can leave it up longer. We had because of the conditions out there, rain and snow.
Oh, sure.
We think that's a limited lifespan, but it may stay up longer than a week.
Okay.
But at least a week.
Okay. No. And of course, you can get more information at mariedrakeplanetarium.org. You can also go to the Juneau Nordic Ski Club at jnski.org. That's an organization that promotes skiing in Juneau. Pretty much they invite anybody
to be
members.
Oh, yeah, they do great work. Like I said, I live in the valley and I've been skiing every day for a month at Montana Creek and the campground, which I skied both today.
So they help maintain some of the trails.
Oh, yeah. They have all the equipment. They have rollers and they groom it for skate and classic.
That's really cool.
In fact, in the Olympics, they call skate freestyle. So just another synonym.
I love that. That's so cool.
Oh, one more thing. Today's Friday the 13th. And let me just say, any month that starts with Sunday has a Friday the 13th. So this month, March and November, all start with Sunday. So they all have Friday the 13th.
Oh, well, I always find that February and March, it's weirdly because the 28 days, I guess, but the days always, the dates always fall on the same day. So like, that's why there's always like the same 13th is going to be the same Friday the 13th in March. I always notice that every year, but that's pretty funny.
Well, next month is Equinox too, March 20th.
Oh, right. That's
start
true.
Start of spring.
That's cool. Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium, also here representing the Juneau Nordic Ski Club. It is the Planet Ski. You can start doing it tomorrow all the way through Sunday, February 22nd, and maybe longer. It's a self-guided 2-mile from the sun to Neptune. Check it out. It's
thank
cool.
you, Boston.
Yeah, thank you so much, Steve. I really appreciate you being here today.
Salmon by your side. You saw me and I could feel your pride. So long ago, your being left this world, but your fire lives on in those you were touched with your God. Even though you're gone away, your love is with us still. Your hands cared for us.
That's us going out with a little more Sunny Porch. Catch their album release party tonight at 5 p.m. Juneau Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juneau 104.3 and KAUK Juneau Ok Bay 91.7. Find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon. You can also find live stream archives on KTO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support for Juno Afternoon comes from listeners and viewers like you. Plus, Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Tongass Federal Credit Union. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunath Cheesh, go check out The Rhythm of Freedom over on KXLL. Have a good weekend, everybody. Gunath Cheesh!